clenched lids and fell in steaming dollops to the ground. Luna looked deeper, past the layers of memory wrapped around the heart-turned pearl. What she saw astonished her. "She walled off her sorrow," Luna whispered. "She covered it up and pressed it in, tighter and tighter and tighter. And it was so hard and heavy and dense that it bent the light around it. It sucked everything inside. Sorrow sucking sorrow. She turned hungry for it, and the more she fed on it, the more she needed. And then she discovered that she could transform it into magic. And she learned how to increase the sorrow around her. She grew sorrow the way a farmer grows wheat and meat and milk. And she gorged herself on misery." The sorrow eater sobbed. Her sorrow leaked from her eyes and her mouth and her ears. Her magic was gone. Her collected sorrow was going. Soon there would be nothing at all. The ground shook. Great plumes of smoke poured from the crater of the volcano. Firion shook. "I should throw you in the volcano for what you did," he said, his voice catching in his throat. "I should eat you in one bite and never think of you again, just as you never thought of my mother again." "Firion," Zan said, holding out her arms. "My precious Firion. My simply enormous boy." Firion began to cry again. He released the sorrow eater, who fell in a heap on the rock. "Auntie Zan," he whimpered, "I feel so many things." "Of course you do, darling." Zan beckoned the dragon to come close. She put her hands on either side of his enlarged face and kissed his tremendous nose. "You have a simply enormous heart, as you always have. There are things to do with our sorrow eater, but the volcano is not one of them. And if you ate her, you would get a stomachache, so." Luna cocked her head. The sorrow eater's heart was in pieces. She would not be able to repair it without magic, and now her magic was gone. Almost at once, the sorrow eater began to age. The ground shook again. Firion looked around.
"It's not just the peak. The vents are open, and the air will be bad for Luna. Everyone else, too, probably."
The woman without hair, the mad woman. "No," Luna thought, "not the mad woman. My mother. She is my mother." The word made her shiver. Looked down at her boots and smiled. "My boots can take us to where we need to go in no time. Send Sister Ignatia and the monster with the dragon. I'll put the rest of you on my back and we'll run to the Protectorate. They need to be warned about the volcano." The moon went out. The stars went out. Thick smoke covered the sky. "My mother," Luna thought. "This is my mother. The woman on the ceiling. The hands in the window of the tower. She is here. She is here. She is here." Luna's heart was infinite. She climbed aboard her mother's back and laid her cheek against her mother's neck and closed her eyes tight. Luna's mother scooped up Zan as tender as could be and instructed Antane and Luna to hang on to her shoulders as the crow hung on to Luna. "Be careful with Glurk," Luna called to Firion. The dragon held the sorrow eater in his hands, extended as far from his body as they could be, as though he found her repellent. The monster clung to his back, just as Firion had clung to Glurk for years.
"I'm always careful with Glurk," Firion said primly. "He's delicate."
The ground shook. It was time to go. Chapter 46, in which several families are reunited. The people of the Protectorate saw a cloud of dust and smoke speeding toward the town walls. "The volcano!" one man cried. "The volcano has legs, and it's coming this way!"
"Don't be ridiculous," a woman countered. "Volcanoes don't have legs. It's the witch. She's coming for us at last, just as we knew she would." Does anyone else see a giant bird coming closer that kind of looks like a dragon? Though, of course, that's impossible. Dragons no longer exist, right?
The madwoman skidded to a halt at the wall, letting Antane and Luna tumble from her back. Antane wasted no time, entering the Protectorate's gates at a run. Luna stayed as the madwoman gently set Zan down on the ground and helped her to her feet.
"Are you all right?" the madwoman said. Her eyes darted this way and that, never settling on one place for very long. Her face cycled through a myriad of expressions, one after another after another. She was, Luna could see, quite mad. Or perhaps not mad at all, but broken. And broken things can sometimes be mended. She took her mother's hand and hoped.
"I need to get high up," Luna said. "I need to make something that will protect the town and its people when that thing explodes."
She pointed at the volcano's smoking peak with her chin, and her heart constricted a bit.
"Her treehouse, their garden, the chickens and the goats, Glurk's beautiful swamp, all of it would be gone in a few moments, if it wasn't already. Consequences. Everything was consequences."
The madwoman led Luna and Zan into the gates and up onto the wall. There was magic in her mother. Luna could feel it. But it wasn't the same as Luna's magic. Luna's magic was infused in every bone, every tissue, every cell. Her mother's magic was more like a jumble of trinkets left in a basket after a long journey, bits and pieces knocking together. Still, Luna could feel her mother's magic, as well as her mother's longing and love, buzzing against her skin. It emboldened the power surging inside her, directing the swells of magic. Luna held her mother's hand a little bit tighter. Firion, Glurk, and the nearly unconscious Sorrow Eater alighted next to them. The people of the Protectorate screamed and ran from the wall, even as Antane desperately called out that they had nothing to fear. Zan looked up at the smoking peak.
"There's plenty to fear," she said grimly. "It just doesn't come from us."
The ground shook. Antane called for Athene. Firion called for Zan.
"Caw, caw, caw," said the crow. "Luna, Luna, Luna," he meant.
Glurk called for everyone to hush a moment so he could think. The volcano sent forth a column of fire and smoke, swallowed power, unswallowed at last.
"Can we stop it?"
Luna whispered.
"No," Zan said. "It was stopped before, long ago, but that was a mistake. A good man died for nothing. A good dragon, too. Volcanoes erupt, and the world changes. This is the way of things.
But we can protect. I can't by myself, not anymore. And I suspect that you can't on your own, but together." She looked at Luna's mother.
"Together, I think we can."
"I don't know how, Grandmama."
Luna tried to suppress a sob. "There are too many things to know, and not enough time to know them." Zan took Luna's other hand.
"Do you remember when you were a little girl, and I showed you how to make bubbles around the blooms of flowers, holding them inside?"
Luna nodded. Zan smiled.
"Come. Not all knowledge comes from the mind. Your body, your heart, your intuition. Sometimes memories even have minds of their own. Those bubbles we made, the flowers were safe inside. Remember? Make bubbles. Bubbles inside of bubbles. Bubbles of magic, bubbles of ice, bubbles of glass and iron and starlight, bubbles of bog. The material is less consequential than the intention. Use your imagination and picture each one. Around each house, each garden, each tree, each farm. Around the whole town, around the towns of the free cities. Bubbles and bubbles and bubbles. Surround. Protect. We'll use your magic, the three of us together. Close your eyes, and I'll show you what to do."
With her fingers curled into the fingers of her mother and grandmother, Luna felt something in her bones, a rush of heat and light, moving from the core of the earth to the roof of the sky, back and forth and back and forth. Magic,
Starlight, moonlight, memory. Her heart had so much love it began pouring forth like a volcano. The mountain shattered. Fire rained. Ash darkened the sky. The bubbles glowed in the heat and wobbled under the weight of wind and fire and dust. Luna held on tight. Three weeks later, Antane hardly recognized his home. There was still so much ash. Stone and the remnants of broken trees littered the streets of the Protectorate. The wind carried volcanic ash and forest fire ash and ash that no one wanted to identify down the slope of the mountain and deposited it in the streets. By day, the sun barely peeked through the smoky haze, and at night, the stars and moon remained invisible. Luna sent rains washing down the Protectorate and the wood and the ruined mountain, which helped to clear the air a little. Still, there was much left to be done. People smiled, hopefully, despite the mess. The Council of Elders languished in prison, and new council members were elected by popular vote. The name Gerland became a common insult. Wynne ran and maintained the library in the tower, which welcomed all visitors. And finally, the road opened, allowing citizens of the Protectorate for the first time in their lives to venture forth. Though not many did. Not at first. In the center of these changes stood Athene, all reason and possibility and a hot cup of tea, with a baby strapped to her chest. Antane held his small family close. "I shall never leave you again," he murmured, mostly to himself. "Never, never, never." Both Zan and the Sorrow Eater had been moved to the hospital wing of the tower. Once people understood what Sister Ignatia had done, there were calls for her imprisonment. But with every moment, the life that had been so extended in both women dwindled, bit by bit. "Any day now," Zan thought. "Any moment." She had no fear of death, only curiosity. She had no idea what the Sorrow Eater thought. Athene and Antane moved Luna and her mother into the baby's room, assuring them that Lucan didn't need his own room, and anyway, they couldn't bear to be parted from him even for a moment. Athene transformed the room into a place of healing for both mother and daughter. Soft surfaces, thick curtains for when the day became unbearable, pretty flowers in jars, and paper. So much paper. Though there always seemed to be more and more and more. The madwoman took to drawing. Sometimes Luna helped. Athene prescribed soup and healing herbs and rest and endless love. She was fully prepared to provide all of it. Meanwhile, Luna set herself to discovering her mother's name. She went door to door, asking anyone who would talk to her, which wasn't many at first. People in the Protectorate didn't love her implicitly, as people in the Free Cities did, which was a bit of a shock, to be honest. "This will take some getting used to," Luna thought. After days of asking and days of searching, she returned to her mother at supper time, kneeling at her feet. "Adara," she said. She pulled out her journal and showed her mother the pictures she had drawn back before they had ever met. A woman on the ceiling, a baby in her arms, a tower with a hand extended from the windows, a child in a circle of trees. "Your name is Adara. It's all right if you don't remember it. I'll keep saying it until you do. And just as your mind went skittering in every direction trying to find me, so did my heart go wandering, trying to find you. Look here, I even drew a map. She is here. She is here. She is here." Luna closed the journal and looked into Adara's face. "You are here. You are here. You are here. And so am I." Adara said nothing. She let her hand drift onto Luna's hand. She curled her fingers against the girl's palm. Luna, Athene, and Adara went to visit the former Grand Elder in prison. Adara's hair had begun to grow. It curled around her face in big black hooks, framing her large black eyes. Garland frowned as they walked in.
"I should have drowned you in the river," he said to Luna with a scowl. "Don't think I don't recognize you. I do. Each one of you insufferable children has haunted my dreams. I would see you grow and grow even when I knew you had died."
"But we didn't die," Luna said. "None of us did. Perhaps that was what your dreams were telling you. Perhaps you should learn to listen."
"I'm not listening to you," he said.
Adara knelt down next to the old man. She laid her hand on his knee.
"The new council has said that you can be pardoned as soon as you are willing to apologize."
"Then I shall rot in here," the former Grand Elder huffed. "Apologize? The very idea."
"Whether you apologize or not is irrelevant," Athene said kindly. "I forgive you, Uncle, with my whole heart, as does my husband. When you apologize, however, you may begin healing yourself. It is not for us. It is for you. I recommend it."
"I would like to see my nephew," Garland said, a tiny crack in his imperious voice. "Please, tell him to come and see me. I long to see his dear face."
"Are you going to apologize?" Athene asked.
"Never," Garland spat.
"That is a pity," Athene said. "Goodbye, Uncle." And they left without another word. The Grand Elder maintained his position. He remained in prison for the rest of his days. Eventually, people stopped visiting, and they stopped mentioning him, even in jest. And in time, they forgot about him altogether. Firion continued to grow. Each day he flew across the forest and reported back what he had seen.
"The lake is gone, filled with ash, and the workshop is gone, and Zan's house, and the swamp. The free cities are still there, though. They were unharmed."
Riding on Firion's back, Luna visited each one of the free cities in turn. While the residents were happy to see Luna, they were shocked not to see Zan, and, at the news of her ill health, the free cities grieved as one. They weren't so sure about the dragon, but when they saw how gentle he was with the children, they relaxed a bit. Luna told them the story of a town that was under the control of a terrible witch who held them prisoner under a cloud of sorrow. She told them about the children, about the terrible day of sacrifice, about the other witch who found the children in the forest and brought them to safety, not knowing what horrors had delivered them into this predicament in the first place.
"Oh," cried the citizens of the free cities, "oh, oh, oh."
And the families of the star children held the hands of their sons and daughters a little more tightly.
"I was taken from my mother," Luna explained, "like you. I was brought to a family who loved me and whom I love. I cannot stop loving that family, and I don't want to. I can only allow my love to increase."
She smiled.
"I love the grandmother who raised me. I love the mother I lost. My love is boundless. My heart is infinite. And my joy expands and expands. You'll see."
In town after town, she said the same thing. And then she climbed onto Firion's back and returned to her grandmother. Glurk refused to leave Zan's side. His skin grew cracked and itchy without the daily wash of his beloved swamp water. Every day he looked longingly at the bog. Luna asked the former sisters, friends of Athene's, to please keep buckets at the ready to douse him when he needed it, but well water just wasn't the same. Eventually, Zan told him to stop being such a silly and walk down to the bog for a daily bath.
"I can't stand the thought of you suffering, dearest," Zan whispered, her withered hands on the great beast's face. "Plus, and don't take this the wrong way, but you stink."
She took a rattling breath.
"And I love you."
Glurk laid his hands on her face.
"When you're ready, Zan, my darling, darling Zan, you may come with me into the bog."
As Zan's health began to fail more rapidly, Luna informed her mother and her hosts that she would be sleeping in the tower. "My grandmother needs me," she said, "and I need to be near my grandmother." Adara's eyes filled with tears when Luna said it. Luna took her hand. "My love isn't divided," she said. "It is multiplied." And she kissed her mother and returned to her grandmother, curling up next to her night after night. The day the first wave of star children returned to the Protectorate, the former sisters threw open the windows of the hospital. The Sorrow Eater by now looked as old as dust. Her skin crinkled over her bones like old paper. Her eyes were sightless and hollow.
"Close the window," she rasped. "I can't bear to hear it."
"Leave it open," Zan whispered. "I can't bear not to."
Zan, too, was a dry husk. She hardly breathed.
"Any moment now,"
Luna thought as she sat by Zan's side, holding her tiny hand as light as feathers. The sisters left the windows open wide. Cries of joy wafted into the room. The Sorrow Eater cried out in pain. Zan sighed with happiness. Luna gently squeezed her hand.
"I love you, Grandmama."
"I know, darling," Zan wheezed. "I love."
And she drifted away, loving everything. Chapter 47, in which Glurk goes on a journey and leaves a poem behind. Later that night, the room was quiet and utterly still. Firion had ceased his howling at the foot of the tower and had gone to sob and sleep in the garden. Luna had returned to the open arms of her mother and those of Antane and Athene, another odd, beloved family for an odd, beloved girl. Perhaps she would sleep in the room with her mother. Perhaps she would curl up outside with her dragon and her crow. Perhaps her world was larger than it was before, as it is for children when they are no longer children. Things had become as they should be, Glurk thought. He pressed his four hands to his heart for a moment, then slipped into the shadows and returned to Zan's side. It was time to go, and he was ready. Her eyes were closed. Her mouth was open. She didn't breathe. She was dust and stalk and stillness. The stuff of Zan was there, but the spark was not. There was no moon, but the stars were bright, brighter than normal. Glurk gathered the light in his hands. He wound the strands together, weaving them into a bright, shimmering quilt. He wrapped them around the old woman and lifted her to his chest. She opened her eyes.
"Why, Glurk," she said.
She looked around. The room was quiet, except for the creaking of frogs. It was cold, except for the heat of mud underneath. It was dark, except for the shine of the sun on the reeds and the shimmer of the bog under the sky.
"Where are we?"
she asked. She was an old woman. She was a girl. She was somewhere in between. She was all of those things at once. Glurk smiled.
"In the beginning there was the bog. And the bog covered the world, and the bog was the world, and the world was the bog."
Zan sighed. "I know this story. But the bog was lonely. It wanted a world. It wanted eyes with which to see the world. It wanted a strong back with which to carry itself from place to place. It wanted legs to walk and hands to touch and a mouth that could sing. And so the bog was a beast, and the beast was the bog, and then the beast sang the world into being. And the world and the beast and the bog were all of one substance, and they were all bound by infinite love.
"Are you taking me to the bog, Glerk?" Zan asked. She pulled herself from his embrace and stood on her own 2 feet.
"It's all the same, don't you see? The beast, the bog, the poem, the poet, the world. They all love you. They've loved you this whole time. Will you come with me?"
And Zan took Glerk's hand, and they turned their faces toward the endless bog and began walking. They didn't look back. The next day, Luna and her mother made the long walk to the tower, up the stairs, and to that small room to gather the last of Zan's things and to prepare her body for her last journey to the ground. Adara wound her arm around Luna's shoulder, an antidote to sorrow. Luna stepped out of her mother's protective embrace, grabbing Adara's hand instead. And together they opened the door. The former sisters were waiting for them in the empty room.
"We don't know what happened," they said, their eyes bright with tears. The bed was empty and cold. There was no sign of Zan anywhere.
Luna felt her heart go numb. She looked at her mother, who had the same eyes, the same mark on the brow.
"There is no love without loss," she thought. "My mother knows this. Now I know it too."
Her mother gave her hand a tender squeeze and pressed her lips against the girl's black hair. Luna sat on the bed, but she didn't cry. Instead, her hand drifted to the bed where she found a piece of paper tucked just under the pillow.
"The heart is built of starlight and time. A pinprick of longing lost in the dark. An unbroken cord linking the infinite to the infinite. My heart wishes upon your heart, and the wish is granted. Meanwhile, the world spins. Meanwhile, the universe expands. Meanwhile, the mystery of love reveals itself again and again in the mystery of you. I have gone. I will return. Glerk."
Luna dried her eyes and folded the poem into the shape of a swallow. It sat motionless in her hand. She went outside, leaving her mother behind. The sun was just beginning to rise. The sky was pink and orange and dark blue. Somewhere, a monster and a witch wandered the world. And it was good, she decided. It was very, very good. The wings of the paper swallow began to shiver. They opened. They beat. The swallow tilted its head toward the girl.
"It's all right," she said.
Her throat hurt. Her chest hurt.
Love hurt.
So why was she happy?
"The world is good. Go see it."
And the bird leaped into the sky and flew away. Chapter 48, in which a final story is told. Yes, there is a witch in the woods. Well, of course there is a witch. She came round the house just yesterday. You've seen her, I've seen her, we've all seen her. Well, of course she doesn't just advertise her witchiness. It would be rude. What a thing to say. She turned magic when she was just a baby. Another witch, an ancient witch, filled her to bursting with more power than she knew what to do with. and the magic flowed and flowed from the old witch into the new, the way water flows down the mountain. That's what happens when a witch claims someone as her own, someone to be protected above all else. The magic flows and flows until there is no more left to give. That's how our witch claimed us, the whole protectorate. We are hers and she is ours. Her magic blesses us and all that we see. It blesses the farms and the orchards and the gardens. It blesses the bog and the forest and even the volcano. It blesses us all equally. This is why the people of the Protectorate are healthy and hale and shining. This is why our children are rosy-cheeked and clever. This is why we have happiness in abundance. Once upon a time, the witch received a poem from the Beast of the Bog. Perhaps it was the poem that made the world. Perhaps it was the poem that will end it. Perhaps it is something else entirely. All I know is that the witch keeps it safe in a locket under her cloak. She belongs to us, but one day her magic will fade, and she will wander back into the bog, and we won't have a witch anymore. Only stories. Perhaps she will find the beast, or become the beast, or become the bog, or become a poem, or become the world. They are all the same thing, you know.
The End. You've been listening to The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill, narrated by Christina Moore, and published by Nudged Audiobooks, an imprint of W.F. Howes Limited. This work is copyrighted 2016 by Kelly Barnhill. This recording is copyrighted 2016 by Recorded Books.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.